Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. Unless, of course, you're new here, then welcome for joining for the first time. This show is a little bit different than some other interview shows, but we kind of cut the chit-chat and we dive into an entrepreneur, somebody building a cool company, and try and get into how they think, their psyche, how they've done or why they've done what they've done, and how they've dealt with the ups and downs along the way. And if you have been here before, again, welcome back. I appreciate you being here as always, and I apologize for the delay in releasing this latest episode, but we've got the kinks worked out, and we'll be back on our regular schedule of Monday publishing from here on out. All right, let's get to it. My guest today is a former competitive bodybuilder, but to American Gladiator fans, he was known as Cyclone. And as cool as that is, he's here today because he has built a really, really successful business, sold it, then he bought back half of it, and then he sold it again. So along with his business partner, he helped create the baked nutrition category back in 1993. While eating after a workout, him and his partner, they asked each other, why can't we just put the protein from this chicken breast into that muffin? From this, we saw the birth of Lenny and Larry's. With no business plan, no experience, and $1,400, they did almost everything themselves. Today, Lenny and Larry's products are available almost anywhere that you can buy food, from Walmart to Whole Foods to Target to Publix. Now, let's hack Barry Turner. When it comes to marketing your business, you need to remember that it's not just about getting in front of people. It's about getting in front of the right people. It's about marketing to who matters and then connecting them with your message at the right time that will resonate with them the most. So if you want to target your customers where they are every single day, and when they are ready to make a decision, LinkedIn can help you. When you advertise on LinkedIn, which is the world's largest professional network, you have the opportunity to build a long-term relationship with your customer. LinkedIn has the marketing tools to help you target your customers with precision, down to their job title, company name, and industry. Why? Because better targeting equals a message your customers care about, which, in turn, leads to more trust built with your potential customers. Here's the best part of all of this. You can start absolutely for free. And in fact, if you take action now, you're going to get $100 of advertising for free. To redeem a free $100 LinkedIn ad credit, go to linkedin.com/hack. Some terms and conditions do apply. But to get your $100 credit, go to linkedin.com/hack and get started today. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very special guest. Barry, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. Glad to be here.
Oh, absolutely my pleasure. Absolutely my pleasure. I think this is going to be a lot of fun, so I'm looking really forward to this. Let's jump into it, shall we?
Sounds good. Let's do it.
Excellent. Barry, let's start here.
Okay.
As an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Wow. You hit it right out of the park with the first question. I love it. First, I love being called an entrepreneur. I just really think there's so much freedom and independence associated with that label. But I think with all successful entrepreneurs, I think we have a few things in common. Namely, none of us quit. I think we just have a crazy passion for what we do. And I don't think we'll ever be outworked. But since you asked for me to like to maybe name one, I think for me, it's just, I was always determined to win. And that's not win at all costs, you know, to cheat, lie, and steal or anything like that. But I was just always determined to win. I thought through hard work and perseverance. And most importantly, I never quit. So I think that's the thing that maybe separates me from a lot of people, but I think most entrepreneurs carry that trait.
I love it. I love it. You're right with the whole, none of us quit, the passion, but this never quitting, is this something that you've always had, or is this something that maybe you fumbled at the beginning in business and then realized that, okay, I got to just be more persistent and just follow through in this?
I think it's been like that my whole life. As a young man, I don't think I really set out to become an entrepreneur or a business owner. I was an athlete. As we always say, once an athlete, always an athlete. So no matter how old we are, we still say, I'm an athlete. I think that really comes from that is just the learning that at a very young age, which in sports, you can't quit. And I always feel like the only time you lose is when you quit. So as long as you're always moving forward. But I think, John, I think people start putting kind of a time limit or a shot clock on their career, their life. And it's like, I have to do this by 30 or by 40 or I'm a failure. And I just don't think that's true. I just don't think you should ever limit yourself in that regard. I think you should say, whatever it is, you know, if my success comes at 50, 60, 70, what does it really matter? As long as you're always moving forward. If you're sitting still, in my opinion, you're moving backwards. So I think just always moving forward is the key.
I love it. Always moving forward. And so you come from sports. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And you're right. Like the hard work, the determination, always moving forward. That is an athlete. Something actually I read interestingly, and I'm not an athlete, Barry. So don't mind me.
We can still be friends.
All right, awesome. Awesome. But I learned that there was this coach who taught like Olympic world athletes, and he was asked what separated world-class athletes from the average athlete. And he said, everybody's got to work hard, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But he was like, it was the ability to not get bored of practice. So doing the things over and over and over again, and most people will quit because it's so damn boring.
Yeah.
But he'll just keep going. And I've wondered that about business, because there are things that just aren't that fun to do, but you have to do it.
Right. Listen, I think that's great what you just said, because it makes me think of Malcolm Gladwell, who said, to be an expert at something, I'll paraphrase, that you have to do it at least 10,000 times to become an expert at it. So it's the same with practice. It's like fielding ground balls or shooting free throws. Like you're doing it over and over and over again. And I think you nailed it in terms of business too, because a lot of things can be repetitive in business. But the more we do them, the better we do them, the quicker we do them, which frees us up to do even more. So I think that ties in really well.
So you didn't always know you were going to be an entrepreneur?
No, I was just, for me, it was just, there were two words. I started at the very beginning, which I, like I said, just being an entrepreneur, it just screams freedom and independence. And I love those two words. And I never wanted to work for anyone, although at some time in our life, we're going to. But if I can just kind of just give you a brief history, because I think my Lenny and Larry story kind of ties into a lot of things. Again, it's centered around sports. I was a bodybuilder. I actually had a short little stint as a professional wrestler, but more importantly, I came to California in like 1991, and in 1992, I was selected out of a tryout of over 300 people as an American Gladiator. So when I showed up that day to go for this audition, I'm literally looking at all these people, and I had blinders on, and I looked through everyone and said, I'm going to be the gladiator. No one here can beat me. And that was just, I was so determined to do this. So through about a 3-month process, I was finally selected as an American Gladiator, and my call name was Cyclone. But I got injured on the show, John, and tore my bicep tendon, and from there really launched my career into business. I was always always considered myself a smart guy, and I was educated and all the above, whatever, but my goal was just not to work for anyone. So I think that's what has driven me really my whole life is I love making the decisions. I love making the executive decisions. And I know if it doesn't work, it's gonna be all on me, and I'm fine with that.
You also said, I read somewhere, that you didn't set out to create a new category with Lenny and Larry.
Yeah.
But that's what happened.
Yep.
How does that just happen? Well, you didn't say it just happened. Hey, sorry, right, you said, right. But it happened.
It did happen. And now we are a category of one, but it is a category nonetheless. It was more about, you think about this, in 1993, I'm sitting with my buddy, Benny Graham, who really was, he was my Lenny of Lenny and Larry. So Benny and Barry became Lenny and Larry. And wow. There's a lot more to the story. The logo, it's even funnier. The logo is based off of what our real hair looked like. We had very long hair. We were just these two huge guys that lifted weights and we ate all the time. So, but when I got injured, we're sitting having breakfast. A lot of people have heard the story, but we're having breakfast in Marina Del Rey, California, and we're eating chicken breast and egg whites. We're still eating like bodybuilders. And I just looked at him one day, and we had a muffin sitting there. We were going to split this muffin. And I said, why can't we just put the protein in the muffin? And he looked at me, and he goes, we're doing with. And I said, he goes, we're doing this. And I said, you damn right we are. But it was that one, I keep telling people, it wasn't a light bulb moment. It was a giant spotlight that just said, man, you guys are onto something that could be world changing, not just life changing. I mean, literally changing the world. Protein needed to be in the mainstream. And we knew it as bodybuilders, as weightlifters, but the masses didn't know anything about protein. So we were out pounding, man, we were pounding the pavement for years and years and years. And it was very hard to educate people one by one for something we're trying to do, because this was pre-internet, it was pre-cell phone, and we had to do it the old-fashioned way. So we were literally trying to, we were driving the protein train into familiar items. So
at what point, you're sitting there near the beach,
yep.
you're two bodybuilders,
yep.
you are eating a muffin, and you think we should get the protein into the muffin. Yes, it's a spotlight sort of time,
yeah,
rather than a light bulb. But between there and actually getting your first product out the door,
yeah,
what were the doubts?
Well, it's funny you say that, because we never had a doubt. We were, maybe we were just so naive that we just said, this is going to work, and whatever it takes, we're going to make this happen. And what was so crazy, what happened on day one, what we accomplished on day one is more than a lot of people will accomplish in the first month of their business. Is we ran out of there and we bought muffin mix and protein powder, and we raced back to my house to bake these muffins. We opened up a bank account that day. We started this company with $1,400, and we drew our logo. We shot the photo for the logo. We did everything. We found a co-packer, everything in day one, because we were so excited. And the excitement honestly never left. But when you're so early, if there was any kind of, if you want to call it doubt, you're just thinking like, man, is the market ever going to catch up to what I'm doing? Or am I just in a category or creating something that there's no demand for? And so it's fast forward. And in 2001, we sold our company. We did okay to create something that has some value to sell it. You know, you have to be very proud. But I always second guessed selling the company. I never wanted to sell it, because I didn't think Lenny Leary's got to be what it was going to be, which what it is today, which is a world-renowned brand. So I ended up buying half the company back in 2007. That's what happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, but you bought it back individually or with your partner?
Individually with the new partner, Don Crouch, who had the company at that time. And Don had done some really good things with private label, but really nothing with the brand. So really Lenny Leary's was more a company. It wasn't a brand. And I just thought, it's time to turn this into a brand. And so it was just a combination of having my original partner and then having my new partner. But the one constant in both of those was that I was involved. And I was just determined to turn this crazy little logo into a brand, a recognizable brand. And that's what happened.
Wow. So you were out of it for 6 years.
Yep. Yeah.
It's interesting because this is kind of a familiar story a couple hundred episodes ago now, though. But
okay.
Brian Smith originally created UGG boots.
Oh.
And yeah, he was the creator of UGG boots. And in like the 70s and early 80s on the beach in California, flogging the boots, trying to get them to sell, built it up somewhat, sold it. Then several years later, got kind of mad at it and bought the company back, and then turned it into this worldwide brand and then sold it again.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. It's interesting because it's like, I guess for somebody like you who seems like you don't have a lot of doubts, it seems like that's the one thing that you have doubted about business, is that you doubted that you sold it at the right time.
Yeah. Well, you know what, John? It's funny. Everyone who knows me, and I've done a few interviews and things, you know, recently, and the constant theme is that, okay, now you did it again. Like you're talking about Brian, I built it up, sold it, bought it back, and sold it again last year. And as I sit here right now, there's part of me that says, maybe I'll buy it back again. And the key thing is, it's not about money. That doesn't drive me. I miss my brand. I'm still involved. Don't get me wrong. I'm still involved, and we have a great team in place, all of the above. But I like it better when it's my show. I like it better when I don't have to answer to shareholders and board members. I like calling the shots, but I love being around my team. My team fires me up. They absolutely inspire me. I feel like I'm surrounded by a bunch of many entrepreneurs, and that's what gets me excited. I'm very proud to, I love empowering people. And I think that's what my team misses too about having me in the, we'll call it the chair. And even though I support our current CEO, who's an awesome, awesome guy and doing a great job, but still my baby, and I do miss it. So.
Wow. So it's not a full-time thing anymore?
Well, it is. And I do.
It is.
It is ish. I'll say ish. I mentor a bunch of smaller companies.
Okay.
So, which is fun for me. I love helping. And I invest in a few smaller brands as well. And spend a lot of time now up in Park City, Utah. I love skiing up there. Love the city. And hanging out with my dogs and my wife. So.
Nice. I love it. So this idea, though, of the freedom and yep. the independence and being yep. in control mm-hmm. and selling it a second time, and you're in there, but you don't have that full control. Is there yep. a part of Barry Turner that just wants to be sitting on the beach and come up with that idea again and run with it?
Part of me, yes. But you know what? Here's what I think is that I don't think you can, it's hard to get lightning to strike twice. It really is. And I think if you go searching for that idea, I don't think you ever find it. I think that idea has to find you. So sitting on the beach and waiting for it to happen, maybe, but I love business. I love just being involved at every level, from the creative side to selling it. I love to logistics, whatever it is. I just love to see it all come together. And to think that one day back in 1983, that I created something that now has this value, but is now kind of it's a machine and has all these moving parts. It's pretty cool to think that you had the vision to see the invisible back then. And it's all just kind of humming now, like a nice car engine.
Right. This idea that an idea has to find you. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to argue this a bit
okay.
if we can.
Okay. Yeah.
Just like,
John, well, because, I thought we were friends, man. Come on.
Well, just let me put it this okay. way and see, this is how my head's going to it.
Okay.
Which I've had people say that, oh, you're lucky. That's luck.
Yeah.
And it's like, right. And I fully agree that there is luck. There's timing. There's all these things for people's successes, but you have to put yourself in front of that luck to make it available to you.
Yep.
So if you're never thinking or pushing for an idea, is it possible that it can just come to you? Like if you were just like a working bee drone in an office, yep. bored yep. out of your mind
yep.
on Facebook the whole time, is an idea just going to spring in your mind as much as somebody out there trying to find an idea?
Well, I think we put ourselves in those positions. And the reason I think that it finds us is because, yeah, think about this. My whole life was around sports and athletics and bodybuilding, which led me to the whole protein concept. And I'd say that it found me, but maybe I found it. But I'm an avid reader, whether it be articles, books, et cetera, listen to podcasts, et cetera. So I'm always just keeping my mind open so that if something hits me, that I just go, okay, this could be big, or this excites me. More so, it has to excite me before I want to go run in there. But the one thing I always tell people is there's a few words that I don't use. I don't like the word luck. I don't like the word hope, wish, try. You're leaving way too much to chance. As they say, the luckier, the harder you work, the luckier you get. And that's really been my life. And so I don't really attribute it to luck, because we're a 25-year overnight success. And so you think about it, being 15 years too early. Just think about we were pounding the protein drum in 1993. The only thing that was around that was pushing protein was metrics, protein powders and protein bars. And then with the likes of companies like, which one of my favorite brands out there is Clif Bar. I think it's just such a, love the brand, love the company. Clif was an energy bar. So things were coming. We were, just think about this, in 93, we were putting protein into muffins and cookies and brownies and popcorn and granola. And people are going, why? And we're like, because it's going to be big. Protein's going to be the next thing. And it was so funny. But if I had to go back to my younger self back then, I wish we would have focused more on, like, say, muffins or cookies and really pushed that. But we were so busy. We were just so busy with innovation without really creating the success, if you will.
Fair enough. And speaking of innovation and starting back in the 90s, like you said, pre-cell phone, pre-internet.
Yeah.
But also, I'm not going to say pre-fad diets because those have been around for a long time.
Yep.
But I mean, since 93, we've had some serious ones that have changed the way people eat.
Yeah.
At least temporarily, Atkins maybe, or gluten-free now.
Yep.
But we've also had the internet.
Yep.
How do you keep a company going, thriving, and growing through crazy changes in, like, because it's been so many years, that things, the ecosystem has to change. How do you stay afloat and thriving within that?
Well, it's funny, and this is where I have a little bit of, we'll call it an impasse with our current, their majority shareholders. I'm still a shareholder of the company. I could share this with all the people out there. They have one vision. I still have a different vision. I don't chase trends, and I'm pretty good at recognizing what I think is a fad. And so I don't want to put ourselves in that. So if we stay in our lane, if we continue to stay a category of one, now it's funny, I'm not going to name people by names, but all these companies that came out there and started launching protein cookies, they are falling like trees right now. And because all they did was copy, and it doesn't take people long to look and go, okay, they're just copying Lenny and Larry's. They're trying to be the next Lenny and Larry. Don't try to be the next Lenny and Larry. Try to be the next you. Create your own Lenny and Larry's version and just stop following people. And that's how we're able to kind of stay and to separate ourselves from everyone else. When the dust settles, after all these years, we're still standing. And it's because we've built a massive following. We have an unbelievable fan base out there. And I call them fans. They're not customers. They're absolutely fans. And they love us for what we stand for, which is we don't take ourselves too seriously. We just make really good tasting products, and we're having a hell of a lot of fun.
Building a fan base around a food product is interesting.
Yeah.
I would think that the internet plays a huge role in that.
Yes.
And I would think that staying true to your vision and not running off to every fad. I come from rock and roll and music. I think like AC/DC or the Ramones.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't change, but if you love them, you friggin' love them.
Yeah, yeah.
And you want them to do. And there's people like, but they do the same thing. It's like, yeah, exactly. That's why I love them, because they do it amazingly.
Exactly. Exactly.
Does this play a part in it, that you have your fans and you don't necessarily always have to be grabbing new ones?
Oh, I think it absolutely. Because when you look at like our social media and our engagements and our followers or whatever, because we don't have a million followers, which most people that have a million followers typically have purchased 999,000 of them, is... ours are real people, and you can tell by how they're invested in our brand. And we put things out there. It's like we have them name, try to choose our next cookie flavor. And we're gonna do more of this. It's not even gonna be say contest. It's literally tell us what you want. We're gonna give it a try. Because you think about our fan base, we could reach 100,000, 200,000 people at the drop of a hat to say, hey guys, try this new product that we're launching. We'd love your feedback. They'll tell us if it's going to be successful. But the one thing that people always tell you about Lenny and Larry's is our first and foremost, our products taste great. If our products don't taste great, they're not going to rebuy them. So we're very adamant about making sure that everything we do tastes really, really good. And so, which leads to innovation when you get into, because we do a lot of baked products. And with baking, you use the S word. It's called sugar. And so when you're trying, you can't bake with stevia and monk fruit and sugar alcohols. It's just not a real baked product. So that's our biggest challenge, is trying to make sure that we can do some things that maybe have lower sugar, but still taste like the real deal.
So don't just double down on sugar.
Don't just double down on sugar. Yeah.
Well, you can't just totally, but at the same time, you don't want to just go. But I guess you have to realize if something's not a fad and if it's actually just a change in the industry.
Yep. And the one thing, and that's the one thing, it's like there are a lot of fads coming. Keto's a fad. I don't care what anyone tells you. It's a fad. Mm-hmm. And it's not sustainable. There's some great things about keto, but it's just not sustainable. But fat-free for a long time was, you know, we knew that was a fad and things like that. But protein is not a fad. Plant-based products are not fads. The vegan lifestyle is not a fad. These are things that are here to stay. And the one thing I love about the vegan lifestyle is it's a choice. You're just saying, I'm just not going to eat animal products. So I respect that. But I just don't like following fad things that I know could be here now and gone in a year. And now you're kind of, you're left with something that literally in the end is going to prove to be a failure when you think about it as a product launch.
Right. And so fads as a product, I get, and avoiding them makes sense. Mm-hmm. On, say, the sales side, mm-hmm. you didn't have the internet. You didn't have e-commerce.
Yep.
Is e-commerce a fad?
Oh, God, no. E-commerce is, E-commerce is amazing. And the beautiful thing about it, and no matter what, wherever you get your business news from, they'll say it's only 10% of all sales done in say, the country or the world or whatever. It's like 10%. So think about it, if e-commerce doubles, it's only 20%. And just think about how amazing that is. No, you get to reach people and they get the orders straight from you. And it's just, I think it's the, I love everything about the, where we are in a, from a technology standpoint. I think it's fantastic where we are.
And at Lenny and Larry's, do you push e-commerce? Is that something that where you guys are really focusing?
We do. We push e-commerce. We do work with Amazon. I guess you have to. Mm-hmm. But we still push our own e-commerce and we drive that as well as. But here's the beauty about e-commerce too. And even though someone's not necessarily buying from your site, the beautiful, because e-commerce and social media, it all ties together. It's helping brand you. Because now if I go into a store and I see it and I go, okay, that's the product that I always see online or that's the product that I order online, I can get it at 7-Eleven, I can get it at Walmart now because I see it in there. So the two tie together. And John, where we were different back in, like say 2015, when we were starting to really like on a hiring blitz and bringing in some really good talent to our company, is one of the first things we did was we hired a digital marketing director instead of VP of marketing or a CMO, because we knew if he drove our e-commerce and he drove our presence online, it would spill over into the retail world. And that's exactly what happened. So we got the best of both without having to have really say two new team members. We only had one.
And in essence of the digital marketing side of it, it mm-hmm. seems like it's mostly external, as in on social media and things. Like you don't seem to have a blog or creating content on site.
Yeah, we haven't done that, but we have a great social media manager now who's really running everything. And we have a completely different vision now about where we're going as we will evolve as everything evolves. So all those things are in place and they are coming soon.
Very cool. Very cool. So we've talked about everything that you... that you're good at, that has got you here. Every blog post, every business expert at this point, they talk about this 80-20 rule, mm-hmm. Barry.
Yeah.
Right? You find what you're good at and you ignore the rest. I would love to know something that you are absolutely not good at in business.
I think my biggest, if you want to call it a flaw, I take things a lot of times too personally. And I know that's not, say, a business type of flaw, because there's really not a lot that I can't do, but because I really wear my heart on my sleeve, I'll just say a lot of things too personally when it comes to business. I don't like when people go out and just bash my brand just for the sake of bashing my brand. That's personal to me. Just coming after me, you're coming after everyone that works for Lenny and Larry's. So the only thing I guess that if I had to say I'm not like great at when it comes to business, maybe just a little bit on the finance side, but I think it's something I can learn. I think I'm very capable of doing that. If I focused on it, I could do it even better than I did it in the past. So now I'm not like bragging and saying, hey, I'm great or whatever, but I'm just saying, I don't look at myself as saying I really have a lot of flaws in terms of like business because I've done it all, John. I've literally designed the logo, designed the packaging, baked the products, delivered the products, did the accounting, did the selling, drove the forklift, packed the boxes, flew across country, visited co-packers, worked in R&D. So I've done it all. So that's why I don't feel challenged really in any area.
And no job was below you.
Oh my gosh. I'm so glad you mentioned that. Absolutely not. And I think I got that from my dad, which is, it's better to show somebody what to do than tell them what to do. And if that means grabbing a broom and sweeping, if that means, like I say, packing boxes, if that means getting in the truck and driving, you know, to San Bernardino, whatever it may be, you just do it. And when people get over themselves and say, listen, just because they love to throw titles around, oh, I'm the CEO of my company. Well, how many people do you have work for your company? They go, no one, just me. So then you're the CEO, the CMO, the CEO, you're everything. But then, so nothing should be beneath you. That's how you make it to the top. And that's how you stay on top, is that you approach it that way, that nothing is beneath you.
And during, say, the first trajectory with your first mm-hmm. partner and then the second one into now, there's got to be times where you are doing everything, but you're also doing things you've never done before.
Correct.
You've said that you are sort of an advisor and parts of other companies and mm-hmm. helping people. Did you bring people in or did you ask for advice for other people as you needed it, like through the growing stages of the company?
Yeah, if I went back to talk to my younger self, I would have asked for more help. I'm a little bit stubborn and I would rather figure it out on my own than to ask someone for the help. But if I was given advice right now, I'd be completely the opposite. I would say, ask for the help because there's no reason. It doesn't mean that you're less than anything. And so, but back then I was just, you're talking about somebody who was just, you know, me and my original partner, like you say, we didn't know what we were doing, but that was the beauty of what we were doing is we didn't know what we didn't know. And so ours was always, let's go figure it out and say, okay, well, how do you trademark? Well, back then you couldn't do it online. So we had to go to a library downtown LA and we had to do our own trademarks and we just followed the directions. We didn't know how to bake. So we found an R&D person that could bake. So everything that we did was like, okay, if we can't do this, let's find the person that can. So that was just the whole genesis of our first six year existence was we would just do everything and we would just figure it out. It's nice now to be able to talk to some of these young entrepreneurs and to be able to offer them a little bit of advice and say, it's okay to ask for help.
You'd also, I guess, it'd be like connecting them to the sports world and being an athlete again, which is teaching them the coaches help and being coachable is what's going to get you to where you want to go.
Absolutely. And there's a couple of young entrepreneurs out there who I just absolutely just admire and I love what they're doing. And they come from a sports background and I can name, but like, you know, one of them is a brand called Kettle and Fire, Justin and Nick. These are just two young, just entrepreneurs who aren't afraid to ask for a little bit of advice, whatever, and they're doing fantastic. And the other young men, the Chico brothers from Super Coffee, who I love these kids, and they're all athletes and play college sports and stuff. They remind me of me. It's like they will not quit. And I admire them, but it's okay. They'll stop and say, hey, did you ever come across this? And you say, yeah, here's how I overcame that. And maybe because I didn't have that at my fingertips back then, John, because we didn't even know what the term CPG meant back then, if you think about it. And so it wasn't a term that was used. It was just, we didn't know we were a CPG company. We just thought we were baking high protein baked goods. So it's kind of fun when you can look back on it.
So did you say Kettle and Fire?
Kettle and Fire. Yeah. Yeah.
Kettleandfire.com. Would that be on supercall.com?
They are, it's a bone broth company. They do bone broth soups.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
We'll find a link to it and
link
that for listeners out there since we've already mentioned that. All right. Well, Barry, this has been a truly fascinating conversation. We went places I wasn't expecting, which is awesome. I would love to wrap it up, though, on one final question for you, if I could.
Sure, sure.
Which I'm really interested to hear your take. So I've interviewed almost 500 entrepreneurs at this time, Barry.
Wow.
And I've noticed this thing that I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap. It seems to be this place as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, that we're always projecting our personal and our business successes into the future. Mm-hmm. So no matter what it is we accomplish, it's still when we get to that next metric or when you get to hit that next goal, whatever it happens to be. Barry, you and I both know that the moment you hit that, or even right before, you're going to set bigger, loftier goals into the future.
Yeah.
So rather than looking forward right now, Barry, you've had a brilliant career, but I would love it if you could stop, turn around and look behind you. The highs, the lows, the wins, and the losses. Tell me how you feel about this whole journey up until today.
Oh, wow. Okay. I have enjoyed it. As a matter of fact, I told somebody the other day, I said, enjoy the chaos because I miss the chaos. And you don't know what you're going to miss until it's really gone. But like I said, I've done a few interviews and the common theme for me, John, was always that selling the company one time was kind of cool. You sold it and then you bought it back and selling it again. But I'm telling you, each time that I sold it, it wasn't the best day of my life. It was one of the worst days of my life. And because I live by can't remember who said it, but it was like when you're climbing that mountain and you get to the top, you're going to find out when you get there that there's nothing there. And I think that's what happened. It's happened to me twice. And that I love the journey and I just keep pounding that to people. enjoy this journey, because once it's gone, you're going to miss it. And I mean that, because me personally, I do. And I love being involved. I love solving the problems. I love once if a problem happened and we all get together and we talk about how we're going to solve this, whatever. Once that's gone, you're going to miss it. And you're going to miss having 300 emails sitting in your email box. All of a sudden, it keeps getting smaller and smaller as the years pass. And they say, you know, people don't need you. They don't ask you for what your opinion is and which direction we should go and things like this. So I just think you're going to miss it all. And that's why I know we all want to go and sell our company and make hundreds of millions of dollars, and that's all fine. But if you just stop chasing the money will come. But just enjoy every aspect of it being an entrepreneur, because it's fun. It's just a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Great answer. Great answer, Barry. So Lenny and Larry, or LennyLarry.com is the website.
Yes, it is.
We mentioned I'll find Kettle and Fire. I'll find Supercall. I'm going to find
Super Coffee.
Super Coffee.
Super Coffee.
Mm-hmm. And that Malcolm Gladwell book.
Yeah.
The 10,000 Hours.
Yep.
I can't remember what that book is called, but
I think that was his. I don't remember if it was. He did Outliers. He did Tipping Point. It could have been the Tipping Point, maybe.
That's the one. Yeah. That's the Tipping Point.
Yeah.
I love it. I'll link to all that in the show notes for people when they're done listening. And then, Barry, just thanks for stopping by. Thanks for sharing so openly with us. I truly, truly appreciate it. And I'll just keep doing what you're doing, because it is truly awesome to watch.
Thanks, buddy. John, I really appreciate you. Thanks for having me on here. It's an honor.
We have now reached the point of the show where we need to go back. We need to go back through the conversation, listen to those things that Barry said, and we have to do the hard job of picking one. Are you ready? All right, let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I'm an avid reader, whether it be articles, books, et cetera, listen to podcasts, et cetera. So I'm always just keeping my mind open so that if something hits me, that I just go, okay, this could be big, or this excites me.
And that's the hack. Barry, Barry, Barry. I love this. I love this part of the conversation. This was briefly preceded before this section by Barry saying how he does not believe in luck. How it's kind of putting yourself out there for luck to find you, and taking or making yourself open, right? So consuming lots of books, information, things, especially that interest you, like around weightlifting for Barry, and then being open to ideas or for ideas to strike and being aware of them. So when they do strike, they don't just pass you by and you miss them. We don't just miss these ideas because we don't necessarily, like the idea of the idea doesn't cross our mind and we don't realize it. It's that we don't then take action on that idea. Barry and his co-founder, they came up with the idea of putting the protein from a chicken breast into a cookie. And within, I think, 24 hours or something, they were already starting to make cookies. And they had a logo and everything designed. They just absolutely went for it. Nothing stopped them. That's the thing. You need to, one thing, be there for ideas, but you also need to take action immediately. I honestly feel that every 24 hours or even every hour that passes after you find that initial excitement, every hour that passes after that, it just exponentially increases the chances of you never taking action. You'll start to doubt yourself. You start to doubt your idea, all of these things. I'm not saying start a crazy huge business as soon as you have an idea, but even if it's a small idea, just take action. One thing, there's nothing that terrible that could probably happen from it, but that's where even new ideas spring forth from. Barry said his whole life has been sort of dictated or run around just being lucky, but also the fact that he puts himself in there for luck, and when it hits him, he takes action. Barry, thank you so very much for joining us today. Well, that was a lot of fun. I really thoroughly enjoyed that. It's been a couple weeks since we did an episode, so it feels really good to be back behind the microphone and hanging out with you. Hacktheentrepreneur.com. It's the website. Head over there, get onto the email list if you would like, and check out the blog. We've been doing a ton of writing over at the blog. It's kind of putting out an article once a week as well. Some stuff that should really help you with your business, with what it is you want to accomplish. And with that, I hope you had a good time here. I hope you have a great day. And thank you so much for stopping by once again. I truly appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.